Hello there, everyone, and welcome to episode 11. Yes, 11 of season 2 of Psyched to be with you. It is I, your host, Christopher Leach. Joining me on this episode is Dr. Poppy Gibson. Poppy is a senior lecturer at AIU University over here in the UK and is an EdD, or a Doctor of Education. Naturally, then, you might guess we talk about all things teaching and education from a very sort of holistic perspective. We get a bit ranty. It's all good. We also discuss research, thrillers, mental health, and the pros and cons of going to live in a log cabin. You may also discover that Poppy has an excellent taste in film and Pokemon. Stay tuned for more. And all this, plus way, way, way more, all the usual lovely stuff that you expect on Psyched to be with you, in what I think is arguably the most wholesome episode of the show today. Do please enjoy it. Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to another fantastic episode of Psyched to be with you, with me, your host, Christopher Leach. Today, I'm another extra special fudge chocolate-coated guest for your audible and visual enjoyment. This one is going to be a cracker. I can feel it in my bones, much like I can predict weather. This is the 11th episode now. We're winding down to the end of Season 2 already. No, I can't believe it either. But here we are. Less about me. You know all this. More on my guest. Let's get into that. All it remains for me to do is ask you, my guest, please, could you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do.
Thanks so much, Chris. Thanks so much for having me on today. My name is Poppy Gibson. I'm currently senior lecturer at Anglia Ruskin University. I'm course lead for two of our degrees there. So I'm in charge of the 3-year standard primary education degree and also our innovative blended primary ed degree, which is 99% online. But before that, I was a teacher for 11 years, so just really passionate about education and my real focus on the things that I'm doing at the moment, which is why I'm really excited to talk to you, because I know you've been doing some great stuff, is around mental health and well-being.
Okay, so already, how did you find time to come on the show? Running to court, that's pretty, there's no messing about there, is there, you know?
It's amazing. It's been such a great kind of term so far already. So, yeah, but always we'll find time to talk to you, Chris. Very excited.
Well, I mean, for Jeremy, bury me time, me why, me reasons, we're recording this in September. It's going to go out in November, obviously. So bear that in mind when you're listening to this back. We don't know how much worse the world might have got by the time it releases, but we'll do our best. This is an interesting one for me because unlike any of the previous episodes, we've not sort of really met or spoken before, so I have as little idea about what you do as our listeners might do, which is great fun. Pardon me, getting email notifications through. I won't edit that out, but I do apologise anyway. Close my emails now.
You're a popular person.
I it's just spam, I'm not going to lie. Anyway, so you're doing some education-y stuff. Love to see that. Mm-hmm. You have, is it an EdD, a doctorate in education? Is that right?
That's right, yeah, doctorate in education.
How is that different in flavour to, say, the more well-known PhD, the doctorate of philosophy?
Yeah, so it's interesting, isn't it, whether, you know, people are choosing to do EdDs or PhDs. I think what appealed for me is because I am an educator and that's my career and I can't imagine me moving out of that. To be recognised as a Doctor of Education, for me, felt the right fit. And the model that I liked was I had 2 years kind of studying at the uni, doing small assessments before I went on to do my main thesis. So it just kind of was the perfect pathway for me. But am I right in thinking you're studying at the moment, Chris?
Yeah, so I'm doing a PhD. Obviously, you can also get PsyDs, clinical doctorates, practical doctorates. I forget what they are. They're another flavor of doctoral qualification. So it's interesting to hear that there is an education one. I didn't know that until I bumped into yourself on Twitter. Do you do that on Twitter? Do you bump into people on Twitter? Kind of
thing? Yeah, a virtual bump.
So yeah, it's really interesting to hear like how that functions compared to like a PhD. So that's interesting. So you love education. You're a primary teacher. I can't imagine anything more hellish, if I'm being honest.
Well, it's the best job in the world, Chris, honestly.
Small children are loud and usually sticky and very messy.
Yeah, that's true.
So Explain that to me. Why on earth would you go into primary teaching?
Because you're right, they are small and loud and usually sticky, but it is so exciting getting to work with these people when they are so young, when they are learning about the world, learning about themselves, finding their identity. You can play this really fundamental part in that, in developing their thinking. It's just so exciting. And, you know, we all remember teachers from growing up, teachers from our own schooling that meant something to us. Yeah, you can already remember one.
Well, there's always like that. There's always like that one teacher that you liked, and that one.
There's
that you
always
really
that
didn't
one, like. Yeah. And so the thought of being that one, hopefully for positive reasons, is just amazing, isn't it? That you can touch someone's life and help, you know, prepare them for adulthood. It's just incredible. It's so much more than the curriculum, isn't it? It's not about just teaching them how to do maths, but helping them shape themselves, be confident, appreciate their value and their worth. It's just the most incredible career.
So let's get right into some nitty gritty then, just kicking off. I know a little bit about education, obviously doing psychology, but also studying like a PG cert. Like, I think one of the big problems we have in, to sort of put it in perspective for people, like UK education, sort of the way we view education specifically, is that it's done by age, not ability. Right? That's a huge problem. I think so much of education is regurgitation of information, not actual learning. And I love learning about stuff. My favorite things learning as a boy through to now as an older boy is getting like learning about something and going away and reading about it. That's why I love podcasts. That's why I host one. Just a little plug for myself. What do you think on that? Like, do you think there are ways we could radically improve the system that we've got to make sure we're actually focusing on learning, insight, knowledge, not just spitting facts, if you will?
100%, Chris, and I love as well your lifelong learning journey to this point. I think that's amazing. And so I agree with you, though. I think our curriculum, I mean, in our primary schools now, we're using a curriculum, which is the kind of handbook that was published in 2014. And it's had some revisions since then. But although to me, 2014 feels it shouldn't be that long ago,
really
we're talking
is.
About using a document that is quite old, like a pre-Instagram document to teach computing. Like, so in my opinion, I guess I was hoping as we came through the pandemic and we saw a lot of schools locking down, children were having to study remotely or not study at all, depending on, you know, parent and carer pressures. I was really hoping that when we would come back into schools, we'd see some curriculum reform. We're not quite at that yet. We're still using the 2014 curriculum. But it'd be really interesting, wouldn't it, if we did have that reform, what we would want it to look like. And I was actually talking to my students recently, because this trimester up till Christmas we're doing a module on all about curriculum changes. Don't go to sleep, it's not boring, it's actually really interesting looking how curriculums change. Because do you know schools only had their very first curriculum, like their very first set of guides, in 1988, which again for some of us seems ages ago, some of us not that long, but it's crazy to think schools have only been told what to do since 1988 in England. So
was it just the Wild West before then? Just like...
Yeah, children just running barefoot and being extra sticky, maybe. But there actually, Chris, there was this really cool moment in 2008-2009, and I won't go into it too much, but my students know I'm super passionate. There was going to be this other curriculum called the Rose Curriculum. Unfortunately, due to like political change and the coalition, it didn't come out into schools. But one of the things this curriculum wanted to do, instead of having core subjects, like, you know, there's like English and maths and science are the core subjects. Instead of that, it scrapped that idea and it was going to have six areas of learning. And one of them was going to be understanding physical and mental health and well-being.
Sold.
How cool is that, Chris? And I do always wonder, you know, and you always wonder what could have been, if that curriculum had come in 2010, if we'd put mental health and well-being into our primary schools. And obviously some schools do it themselves. Some schools are very proactive and they are talking about mental health and well-being, but it's not this big part of the curriculum. And I just wonder what could have been. And I do hope in the future, maybe we will get that, you know, a new curriculum. Because why is mental health and well-being not one of our biggest subjects we're talking about.
Well, I mean,
agree or disagree.
Look at who you're talking to. You know, video games, student mental health. That's my jam. I think it goes back to what I sort of said before, though, in that we don't have a value on, like, you know, more sort of sociological principles, like well-being, physical health. Like, pee is something you have to do, not something that is encouraged for the benefit of exercise. There's not enough on, like, sort of personal social health education, PHSE as it was in my day. I'm that old.
Yeah.
You know, like sex and relationships, well-being, consent, all things like that. That even, like, you know, I've always said, why do I learn Pythagoras theorem and not how to do taxes? One of those is significantly more important in day-to-day life than the other. Speaking more from personal experience, like talking about bereavement, I think would be really valuable in school. Talking about, like, how to plan a funeral is, like, very practical and actually very helpful. That isn't encouraged. And I say that because all of those things are just things that you're expected to kind of just know or find out or hope that someone else has a pedagogical relationship with you to tell you about it.
So, and that's the thing, and if you don't have that network, if when you reach adulthood, like you say, if you don't have that network and you're trying to deal with taxes, get a mortgage, learn how to rent and budget, or someone dies, and how, we can't just know unless we've been taught these things through our, you know, our family situation. How can we know? And you're so right. One of my students even said it to me yesterday. Why isn't our curriculum just like how to live? Where are the living skills? You know, the day-to-day living skills, like obviously maths and English are important to get, you know, a job. You're probably going to need one of those key subjects, but where's the life stuff? And I totally agree with you about bereavement, because we're all going to die. So when something so huge that is part of life is going to happen to all of us, I don't know, unless you get frozen, is that death? Maybe, but what I'm saying is, yeah, why are we not teaching about death as a really big part of the curriculum? Because it's going to happen to everyone we know, unless they get frozen. I mean, that's the conversation for another day. I think Walt Disney is frozen, right?
I believe so, but I mean, can you trust what you read on the internet nowadays? You know? but I think it all rounds to this, like, well, that greatly impacts mental health, and mental health is so important, and, like, you know, I'm talking shop now, but it's so stigmatized. We don't know how to talk about it. The language is lacking, so people don't know how to deal with it. It causes social and emotional friction, which leads to isolation, which leads to more mental health challenges. Anywho, but yeah, so we, big rabbit hole there, big opinions. I'm gonna chuck another political opinion at you. Feel free to ignore it. Dr. Gibson, Poppy, have you got a preference? I don't want to say
Poppy, yeah.
Poppy's fine. So, Poppy, okay. Anything that is basically arts or creative is being dunked on by the government presently. Your thoughts on that?
Do you know what? It's coming down to funding at the moment. You're aware, I'm sure, that we've got purses tightening in schools. So issues with funding is going to impact, you know, the curriculum, the things schools can provide. And when they're having to make decisions between, you know, running their drama club, hiring their, you know, singing coach, or having the money to support children in the day-to-day, you know, math and English lessons, unfortunately, many schools are having to choose those academic subjects. And obviously with the accountability for SATs and assessments in schools, again, those core subjects like maths and English are often favoured in the curriculum time, meaning sometimes those arts and performance subjects are pushed to the sideline. Again, not in all schools. There are schools where the arts, you know, are a central part of how the school is run. But I think often, Chris, it's just coming down to funding, unfortunately, particularly as we're going through this cost of living crisis. And when something's got to go, unfortunately, it's going to be the things that many students enjoy, but is not perhaps leading to the government's same desire for employability and future outcomes.
It's almost like creative things are being, I don't know, say, gatekept by people that have the additional financial resources to be able to afford them, as if that's some type of segregatory exercise, saying that certain people of certain backgrounds and or socioeconomic statuses shouldn't be allowed to enjoy things like art. Hot take.
It's interesting, because I was asking my students yesterday, what was your favourite subject at school? when you were a child, and so many were listing these creative things, remembering the play they did at school, remembering their art lesson, remembering their DT session. So you're right, why should we segregate that when so many of the pupils enjoyed it? Why is it not being made so freely available, particularly where when children go home, they may not have the resources at home to be able to paint or draw? When will they ever be able to access such things? So it is sad, isn't it? Because so many of us don't always access the academic side of the curriculum. We're not always good at maths or an amazing writer. So being able to present ourselves non-verbally through a picture, through a dance, can be so powerful. So I mean, those subjects you enjoyed at school, Chris?
Well, I'm a very nerdy sciencey boy. I'm doing a PhD in psychology, which some people will tell you is not a science, but my stats will tell you otherwise.
It's a science, I agree.
but I think for me, like, you know, I would not want, I dread to think of a world that doesn't have artists and musicians and writers in, because, you know, that's like, art's meant to make you feel something, right? Like, that adds enjoyment. Like, I can't imagine going through like a day without listening to music. That'd be terrible. I'd have such a low mood. It'd be so bad. Like, so
agree.
I wasn't necessarily very good at those type of, I mean, you know, I play guitar. I enjoy writing music. I enjoy playing music.
Oh, amazing.
Like, it's fun. It's a release, right? But I think to not encourage talent in those areas when maybe you're not good at maths is you're letting the students down there. I think, listen, I would always be wary against, like, you're going to be a star, you know, kind of like, we should all be thinking about manageable career paths, yeah? And now I think in the present generation of, like, influencer, streamer, content creator, he says on his podcast, I'm aware of the irony, like, of that being, like, the equivalent of pop star, movie star. But what interests me, though, is, from an academic standpoint, is there is not financial investment in creativity as there is in sport. Now, I'm aware of the old, I'll go to uni, I'll do an English degree, which has now become psychology, so I'm even more aware of the irony. But sports scholarships, big investment, because there's big money in sport. We can market you in the right way. Not quite the same in this oversaturated market, despite the fact creative subjects are really important.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. And building on that then, in addition to what you're saying, let's look at it from a mental health point of view. At the moment, I'm currently putting in funding to do music, to set up a music therapy intervention. So we can see music therapy, art therapy. How often do we see in maths therapy? Like, it probably exists. I haven't seen it. What I'm saying is, quite often, the therapeutic tools that I'm seeing are helping people with their mental health are these arts. You know, are doing music, getting to dance, getting to draw something. So clearly there is something there that makes us feel better. So yeah, why are we letting that be removed from the curriculum? And I think you're right, although it is being sometimes removed, it's not always the school's fault, and it's coming down to this kind of educational system we've created, isn't it?
I realize, like, I got on my soapbox there. I've also just randomly remembered.
Always get on your soapbox.
I actually had music therapy as a kid. I've just remembered. Like, I can't remember what for, but I remember having it, and I remember it being beneficial.
Music therapy.
Yeah. So I remember that taking place. Cool. And I think it's also really important to say, when we're talking about creative projects, it's not just the people on stage doing the business. There's all the people behind the scenes. It's a little known fact. I did media back in college. And, like, you know, stage, costume design, you know, things like, if you've watched any TV show, things like, if they hold a newspaper, it's not going to be a real one, it's going to be something fake that someone's made. And if you have two shots, that is the inside and the outside, that's double the actual creative work. Someone makes that. That's their job. And a lot of people just can't conceptualize that when they watch, say, like, TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're right. It's all around us, isn't it? And what do most of us want to do? Like, again, generalizing, but after a busy day at work, lots of us want to come home, watch programs that have been created, you know, to relax. I'm not sure what you're into. You're currently watching the Jeffrey Dahmer series, but we want to sit and relax. But imagine if that wasn't there, if these programs weren't being made. Like, clearly, this is a big part of our lives. You know, I personally wouldn't want to come home and do a maths worksheet. So it's just, yeah, it's really sad to think that if we're not providing these things in school, it's going to be detrimental to children who want to go into those pathways. They don't all have parents and carers that can afford, you know, those kind of stage clubs and things that are on weekends. They're not accessible to all because of the cost. So yeah, again, maybe if we have this curriculum reform, maybe that's something we need on there, Chris, more arts, as well as more mental health focus.
I'd back it. You know,
you'd win. We'll get right in it after this show. We'll get cracking.
have you thought about like going for government, Poppy? You know, I mean, I think you'd have a pretty strong like body of work to go for there. I'm a big fan of meritocracy. Oh. You know,
leaders in education. You know, I just said to you, I want to say an education, but I don't know.
the draw of political office is too much for anyone.
Yeah, not for me. I don't think.
So let's loop background. We do have a semi-structured script. You mentioned that you sort of run these two courses, that teaching is sort of just resumed. Obviously, by the time it goes out, it'll be way into its swing. You know, what have you sort of been working on recently? What can you tell us about? What are the projects you've had on the go?
So obviously with the students, we're currently just learning about teaching. But I think what's great as a lecturer is, as you know, it's not just about your day-to-day teaching. You have that outlet for research as well. So some interesting things that I've kind of got in the pipeline, Chris. I've got a book coming out very soon with Routledge, and I've got loads of people, loads of teachers all over, actually the globe. We've got some international voices have shared kind of experience of being teachers and advice for teachers. The book's called Primary Teacher Solutions. And that's just been so exciting, just getting so many voices in there. So it's going to be kind of a handbook for primary teachers, just to make their day-to-day that little bit more inspiring, that little bit easier through kind of like teacher hacks. So that's coming soon. And in terms of research, I've got a study that I'm just getting through ethics with my friend Steve, and we want to look at students accessing pornography, looking at whether if they're spending more time on their laptop to study, because obviously after COVID, we started putting more resources online. Some programs like Open University are solely online. So is presenting learning in that online way actually encouraging behaviors such as consumption of pornography? So that's something we want to explore. We're just going through ethics for that to make sure it's ethically sound. I've got another little thing on the go with my friend Tom from ARU. We want to look at, and you might be interested in this because you're studying your PhD, we want to explore the pressures of academics who are currently studying for a doctoral degree.
God is my response to that.
you might want to sign up as a participant. But again, this is in the early stages, but kind of thinking particularly as a post-pandemic academic, how those pressures might have changed. Particularly now, we've got students coming in to our unis, haven't we, who are going through college in the pandemic. They've not had the same social opportunities to like work in groups and things. And then they're coming up to university and you're saying, you know, work in a group to make a presentation. And they're finding it really tricky. Lots of students with anxiety that are just finding it hard to engage, not only with the workload, but with the kind of social load that university brings. So I think being an academic in 2022 is amazing, but perhaps it's coming with these pressures we haven't seen before. And for those of you still studying, how are you balancing, you know, your own study with supporting others with their study? So that's something else that we've kind of just started that I think is going to be quite interesting.
So I would like to say that, not to try and get myself as a participant on it, but I'm quite uniquely poised for that because our cohort, as a joke, refer to ourselves as the COVID cohort. We started in January 21. So that first year was all online, basically. We didn't actually meet up in person until like nearly the end of the year. And that was sort of, you know, pushing it like in terms of, you know, following guidance and meeting in smaller groups and things. There are still people that I haven't met from like our cohort just because of various things.
Are you a big cohort? How many of you have you got?
Oh, on that PG, I think there was 40, 45, I think, that year. I'm guessing. Don't quote me. But, like, yeah, like, you know, it's so strange to think of that, to then be, like, where we are now towards the end of 2022. And, yeah, I think I agree, you know, the social load, as you put it, is really different in uni. I think, and it relates to what we were saying before, You are, okay, I don't like the term, maybe you'll disagree, but like you're essentially spoon-fed knowledge, and you're told to regurgitate that right the way through college. And then it's like, unit's like, right, here's a concept, go away and do the work, there's some support if you need it. That can shell-shock a lot of people.
I agree. And it's really hard, isn't it, finding that balance between supporting and nurturing students, but also wanting them to come with their own critical thinking. And it is hard. And I agree, some of them have been maybe over-nurtured in college and sixth form and wanting their hands held. But essentially, that's what uni is about, isn't it? Trying to think for yourself. So it is tricky. And then when you've got people who are, you know, even finding it hard to engage, how are they going to even be thinking and learning when they're struggling just dealing with, you know, the overwhelmingness of campus life and a classroom of 30 when they've been used to their bedroom of one? It's a really big shift for a lot of people. So
I would love your perspective on this, because I'm reading Malcolm Gladwell's David and Goliath at the moment, and one of the examples it gives is class size and how smaller class sizes are sold as a more premium option. And, you know, sort of like, oh, you in your school, your child will get smaller groups and more attention. And sort of the prevailing thesis from it is that actually the ideal class size is between sort of 12 and maybe at max 18, because that way you actually have enough diversity in discussion that promotes growth. You have too small a pool, people will be overwrought by the one loud person in the group. If there's too many, you can't control it. What are your thoughts on that type of thing?
That's really interesting. So I haven't read that, but that is really interesting theory, because when I was a teacher, as we mentioned earlier, about half of my career was in independent schools, which generally have smaller class size. So not quite as small as you say there, you know, up to 18, but on average 24 or 20 to 24 children in a class, whereas mainstream primaries are 30. So it was very interesting. And also what you're saying there about there's usually that alpha learner, that one alpha student. So I agree that actually if the class is too small, it can be easy for people to fall into these different kind of categories. If anything, I think having a larger class, I think 30 is actually a good size. And similarly at uni, in my previous uni where I worked, we had much smaller groups. We had, you know, 10 to 15 in a group, and it was almost too quiet. I think particularly at uni, having 30 means people feel there's a bit of a barrier, like you're not going to be singled out and spotted. So there's a bit of protection. There's the opportunity then to have more groups and mixing up groups each week. So it adds to them to get to know different people, different personalities, find buddies and peers to build that kind of social support. So actually, I would say at uni, I'd probably tend to prefer a larger class. I think 30 is a pretty good number. Although they obviously can't always attend every week, so we schedule 30 in a room.
Yeah, but you see the merit in the hypothesis, though, that you need diversity to promote growth, right? That's how it works.
Agreed, totally agreed. I would say, I think maybe the younger the child, the smaller the group to be more successful. But I would think perhaps as adults, having larger groups does offer us more opportunity. But it's an interesting one. Maybe that's our next research project together, Chris. We'll have to do something.
I would love to find out that, because I mean, again, my opinion was I went to a school for visually impaired people, person with albinism, that whole thing, lying psyche, law, plugging myself. But like, you know, I was in a class of four. You know, that then became three, because there were just so, I mean, this was a school of 40. Like, very, very small numbers. And me being the gobby person that I am, if you couldn't tell, host a podcast. like, you know, it was, you were under a microscope. You couldn't sneeze without someone knowing it was you. You know, and like that educationally is very different to a group of 15, 20, 25, 30.
Yeah.
So just to go back to the pornography study, that makes it sound more felicitous than it is. That's an interesting concept, particularly with just relating to access to pornography, because I think I would have gone to like just more like unproductive online use, like time syncing, like I'll just check Twitter and then 20 minutes have elapsed, or I'll just because I mean, without wishing to be too blue, you know, usually if you're looking at that type of material, you're kind of looking from get to A to B. You're not just kind of watching it for the sake of watching it, presumably. Like, that would be a, that to me is an interesting thing to do. Like,
Yeah,
Why not?
this will be part
I'll
of the
just.
study. I can't preempt the results, but the reason we fell into it, so my colleague Steve, who's my co-researcher on the project, he's currently doing his doctorate, his PhD, and he's looking at whether in the pandemic moving to home working promoted this consumption of pornography. So because people were
Okay.
having to work from home on their devices, so I was just really interested in what he was doing, and that's where he and I had a conversation. And I thought, actually, I wonder if that's similar or not for students who've been put in this situation. So yeah, you're right. I guess there are lots of reasons people might choose to view pornography. That's what the study's going to reveal, whether did online learning or does online learning enable these behaviors. As you say, it might not always be pornography. I'm the same. Sometimes I wish I could only have one tab open, but I've always, yeah, Twitter always ends up on a tab. So, or the online shopping. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Does it encourage our behaviors? If I'm on campus, I mean, there's not time for me to be looking at all these things unless quickly on my phone, quickly checking something. So
And
it is,
not
yeah.
pornography, I feel like we should stress for listeners' benefit.
Not porno, no, definitely not pornography. But I think when you're out and about in the world, it's your time management is much different. So when you're at home, that's what's really interesting. That's what we'll find out. So as I say, the study's not started yet, so I have no idea what we're going to find.
Definitely, I was at Cyber Psychology Conference the other week in September for again timing and rhyming reasons. And Professor Anna Cox did one of the keynotes, and she was actually talking about online productivity working at home from the pandemic. And they actually had a study that involved an online tool that told you how long you had tabbed away from something. So you like switched out of Excel into a browser. When you got back, it would tell you how long you were gone for. So like de definitely like have a look at that, because that I can see adding to like your evidence base.
Interesting. That's very interesting. Yeah, I think similar, that reminds me of, on your phone, you can see how long you've spent on each app.
Screen time,
I don't check it. I don't let myself look at those stats.
yeah. So interestingly, I don't mind confessing, I have a time limit on my phone for Twitter, so I don't do any more than that. Like I try and restrict it to an hour on my physical phone, and that is
That's
more
good.
for, because if I'm on my computer, then
Well, like an hour a
yeah,
day.
like if I'm on my computer, it's obviously more. I'm not gonna pretend like it's not, but it's more like I'm sat, like I'm making a cup of tea, and I'm just stood there for too long, or like. I'm in bed, and it's I'm just on it. To stop that time just being too long, it just locks itself out after an hour total, and
Wow,
that's
and then
quite a
it will
helpful
work till the
tool.
next day.
Yep.
You can't use it again.
If it's like a case like I'm messaging someone, I can add 5 minutes to the timer, message, and then okay, then we're done. But it is just to stop that scrolly kind of.
Interesting. I love that. I love that as adults, just having to put boundaries on our behaviors.
Boundaries are very important, and healthy boundaries are better. Little nugget of
No,
wisdom.
it's really good. Yeah, because we talk so much about limiting screen time for our children, but actually to be able to, actually for you to even be able to set that boundary for yourself, that is actually really cool.
So I think screen time is a really interesting issue. Obviously, I work with Dr. Linda Kay, one of the leading sort of voices in cyber psychology.
Amazing.
And like obviously one of the huge issues with screen time is that all the research is really bad at defining what it means. I've spent my entire life looking at screens. I'm visually impaired, so majority of my work has always been on a computer. Spoiler, I play video games for fun. During the sort of early year of the pandemic when I was working, I would log out at Teams at 5, eat, and then plonk my behind right back in this chair to play games. I still felt fully fulfilled and relaxed, but it was all screen time all the time. It's no really different now I'm doing a PhD, I'm not gonna lie. Just the activity is different, and the restorative nature of the activity is what's beneficial. I don't think it being on a screen, personal opinion, is actually that bad. I think it's what you're doing and why more important than the way in which you're doing it. Because like you can read a
That's
book
interesting.
on your mobile phone, that's not as good as a paperback or say like an actual ink-based e-reader, right?
Interesting. Yeah, I think you're right. We need to remember the screen is just the platform, it's just the vehicle. And I think you're right. It's what you're doing on that platform that is what needs to be limited.
My favorite go-to example is from Dr. Rachel Koa, a wonderful game studies author and close personal friend. Previous guest on the podcast, check it out, great episode.
Oh, I will.
But like, you may have been one of those kids that like was under the duvet with a blanket reading a book. No one would have like, put that book down, it's bad for you. Why is it instantly the case because that object is digital? Surely it's the content that is more important. Like, if you're engaging in hate speech, okay, that's maybe not ideal. But if, like, you're listening to, like, watching an educational YouTube video or watching this podcast that's full of great knowledge and an expertise of an educatory expert, surely that's beneficial.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. That's so true.
Sorry, I feel like I'm speaking too much. This is about you. Have you got any other
you're not at all
pieces of work that you'd like to just give a shout out to, anything you've done previously? You've mentioned a few things that are coming up, but something that you're really proud of, maybe, that you'd encourage?
Do you know what, something I'm really proud of? I don't know if you've seen my Twitter like the last couple of days, Chris, but I've currently got Ukrainian refugees living with me, and the mother of the family and I have just written a kind of Not really a book in as much as a tool. We've written what looks like a children's book, but it's actually, what I really want is to get it into our schools to help be a tool for teachers to talk about the Ukrainian war and the migration of Ukrainian refugees to England. Because, you know, we've now had over 200,000 Ukrainian refugees move to England under the Homes for Ukraine programme. So, yeah, I'm really excited about that. We're just sorting the publication at the moment. I've had amazing artist Terry Colkin, who has so kindly offered to illustrate for free, which really is supporting the non-profit focus of the project, because we really want any money from any sales is going to go straight back to Ukraine to help rebuild the cities and schools. But yeah, hopefully this is coming really soon, Chris, hopefully the next few weeks. And then I just want to get this book into schools, because there's a little boy living with me. He's only six. Obviously, he's currently attending primary school and loves it. But it's kind of thinking, what do his peers really understand about his journey? How is he able to talk about his journey? So I really just felt we needed
Poppy. You're talking about giving kids a tool to help them understand the diverse nature and backgrounds of other people, almost as if that will build, I don't know, say, empathy and understanding towards a greater equality for the world. Is that what you're telling me?
It's exactly what we're doing.
Get out. That's too radical. Come on. You can't have that. Children with empathy, imagine.
Well, do you know what? Teachers actually do this really well. And we've got, like, there's the Schools of Sanctuary across the UK. And we do have, like, Refugee Welcome Week in June. But obviously, a lot of refugees' journeys are different to the Ukrainian children's journeys. And a lot of there are some really nice children's picture books out there, but they're showing children with dark hair coming from other parts of the world. So what we really wanted was something that would show this very unique refugee journey, because it's so different to any other refugee journey. The way that we've tried to have this community sponsorship through the Homes for Ukraine scheme, about that, you know, people have just opened their homes for Ukrainians to come and stay for free. So, yeah, hopefully we'll get this book out soon. I'll have to send you a copy, Chris. And
I'll plug it on stream.
Thanks. Just to facilitate these conversations, because they're big conversations to have. And we've all seen the pictures on the news, you know, now slightly bumped back a bit, but this war is very much still going on. Obviously, you know, the fickle nature of England and media. But it's still going on, and it's about making sure we've got these opportunities for these children in our schools to talk about their journeys and, you know, to share that. So hopefully just to help teachers be able to have those conversations, really, just like a stimulus. So that's probably the proudest thing I'm proud of this year.
I love that. I'm also going to, I had to Google it, so I had to check that what I was saying was, but definitely check out Tales from Cloud Canyon. It's a book by Dr. Rachel Collett, but it features a diverse cast of primarily female protagonists, and it's all about that diversity. It's about, like, you know, there is not enough character diversity in our children's books. So definitely, sort of like maybe someone you can get in touch with about a future collab.
Thank you, bringing
great people together. This show, you know what I'm saying? Shaking my own.
Cool, hand. I was loving your contact. That sounds really interesting.
But like, so just to pick a thread from that a little bit, then obviously I know a little bit about teaching. I'm not going to pretend like I know a lot. And I was asked that in my interview, what is my thoughts on teaching? And my response was to inspire. And it sounds very wishy-washy, but it was like, if you can capture someone's imagination and make them leave a class going, I want to learn more, that's all you can ask for. Now, I teach stats, quite hard to do that when you're saying this is how we use SPSS. However, frame that in the context of, I want to teach you how to be an intelligent consumer, to quote one of my pals, Dr. Elizabeth Kilmer. It's like, when you see a stat, 9 out of 10 women, and you see the small print at the bottom, like, out of 10 people, like, you know, understanding mm-hmm. what that means. There is a way of making that theoretical knowledge applied. You seem very applied led. Would you say that's true?
Interesting. Yeah, I think that would be a nice thing for you to take away from what you've learned about me. Yeah.
You seem very, like, we can talk about theory all day, all night, right? But what you do with that knowledge is more important. And from what you've said so far, it's about getting people to really act upon what they think more than just thinking about mm-hmm. it. Again, I'm aware Definitely. Of the irony. I do psychology. I'm doing a PhD.
That's why I think teaching on a teaching degree is so interesting. Particularly, I mentioned to you, we launched our brand new blended degree last year, which is the one that's 99% online.
Is it a smoothie? Because it's blended.
Well, the teaching is super smooth. Should be on stage, Chris. YouTube is your stage. But what's really cool is, for that degree, all my students have to be working in schools at least 4 days a week. So most of them are teaching assistants. So what's really cool is they're learning the theory online. So we like pre-record videos. I'll like pre-record myself talking, put it on there for them to watch anytime. There's activities to do, and they come to campus twice a trimester. But the rest of the time, they're working in school, doing that practice, linking that theory to practice every day. So, and that is so interesting. When we get together, we're meeting on Thursday. They all come to the classroom, they all come to campus, and they all get to share their experiences, how they've understood the learning, how it's kind of linked to what they're doing in school. So I think you're right. What is the point of theory if it's not actually put into action? So yeah, it's a very cool degree to teach on, because they're seeing the merit in what you're saying. Testing out, you know, if you say like children learn better from another child than from an adult, and then they go and do an activity and they're like, oh yeah, or oh no. So you're kind of currently getting them to challenge what is happening in schools and link it back to that theory. So yeah, I think you're right. What's the point if you're not going to actually use it and see results?
I like that line of they're actively applying what they're learning in schools. Like that I got a whiff of revolution there. Let's change things from the inside while we're already there.
Don't tell my boss. No revolution. Just great teaching. Just great pedagogy. That's what we want.
Secrets safe with me. Don't you worry.
No secrets.
So you mentioned that, you know, you taught in primary schools for 11 years. Like what was it that made you want to get into teaching at all? I memed about, you know, kids being sticky and stuff. But teaching is, you know, you're giving a lot out to get involved with teaching. I think it's, you even being a child, you understand that, you know, teachers work really hard all of the time and are not paid well enough for doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Work too hard, work too much, don't get paid enough. I think what attracted me, though, kind of what we were saying at the start, Chris, is for me, it wasn't because I wanted to teach maths lessons every day. It was because... And do you remember that strap line, the I think it was used in teacher training, like those who can teach, because it was against that previous thing people say, like those who can't become a teacher.
And those like, who can't teach cheap PE.
No comment on that one. But that's I think joke. for me, it was the chance to actually think that whatever job someone wants to go on to, if they haven't had that kind of positive childhood, those positive experiences, being like helped to believe in themselves, will they ever reach their, you know, their dreams and goals? So just seeing like teaching as this critical point to kind of what I said earlier, like play a part in someone's life, was just really exciting for me. So I think I'm quite lucky because I knew I wanted to get into education, so I could go straight to uni at 18, did a degree at Edge Hill. In teaching, and then it just kind of went from there. Did masters, did Ed D, and then just through like fluke started teaching adults on a weekend and loved it so much that I ended up kind of a bit like Lion King-esque going like full circle of life to now training teachers, And actually, one of my students asked me yesterday, they're like, Poppy, would you ever go back to being a primary teacher? And I was like, no, I wouldn't. But what's really cool, because I still go back in schools, you know, now and again, but still getting to be a part of that. But I just think now what I love is being a part of these adults' journeys that still supporting people on their pathway, just at a different age, at a different part of their journey. I just love it. I go home so happy.
That's probably like beautiful. That's like, yeah, I just want to, like, you know, encourage people. That's like so wholesome. this is a, so on the complete opposite of that. This is a little bit tenuous. I'm going to bring it up using a personal example, right? But I keep seeing flashes of your rather colourful nails on screen.
Oh.
Yeah. How do you kind of deal with sort of what people define as like the stereotype of a teacher? Like, you know, I'll go in and I'll wear big nerdy t-shirts, flannel shirts, or a blazer, because that's what I like wearing, or like a sweatshirt with like massive Pokemon on, because that's me. I don't care.
No.
I'm still going to teach
you. What's your best Pokemon?
That is a question I was not prepared for. I'll go think of one. I built Bulbasaur. There we go. Plain and simple.
You're going classic.
I've never felt such panic on a podcast episode ever before.
it's a strong choice. My favorite two go hand in hand: coughing and wheezing.
Oh, nice.
That's a my good darling
COVID joke.
not too related soon? To COVID.
Too soon.
Yeah, too soon.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anywho.
Do you know what? So back to like teacher dress code. I think schools are more relaxed now. I remember when I was a teacher many moons ago in school and feeling like, you know, I remember putting spacers in for my piercings, like, you know, clear spacers, not wanting to be seen to have a nose ring, not dyeing my hair apart from in the holidays, and, you know, teachers making sure all their tattoos are covered. I would say that I've seen schools become more accepting of how people look. And I think that's important. I think we do need to show children it's not about what's on the outside, it's about what's on the inside. So if we're asking teachers to conform in how they look, is that actually hypocritical of then, you know, going and teaching them be who you want to be? So I do think it's important. Obviously, you need to be appropriately dressed for being in a school. But I think it shouldn't matter what colour your hair is, should it? Or if you've got piercings and things. I think at university, obviously, you do have that even greater freedom because you're with adults. You're not worrying about, well, mostly their parents complaining. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I sometimes do get a lot of DMs on Twitter like, oh, did you have dyed hair in school? Was it okay? I've got an interview at school. Should I take my piercings out? And it's an interesting one. I'm not a head teacher, so I don't know if that would influence my decision, but surely it shouldn't, should it?
Well, I ask because, you know, I'm a person with albinism. I stick out, so I go the extra mile to stick out even further. Case in point, turned up to a conference in a Pac-Man themed suit that was impeccably tailored, but mostly Pac-Man pattern. Because, you know,
it sounds amazing.
Express yourself through individuality. Again, that diversity is going to breed, I think, confidence, but also instill, be who you are as loud as you can while being respectful. Because why not do you? You know what I mean?
Exactly. So maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's, I think in the past, we were seeing, you know, we want children to be the same, come through this system and move on to the next part of their life. But yeah, I think more and more now we're appreciating that we need to talk about diversity so children aren't growing up feeling that they need to conform. So, you know, when they're making certain decisions in their life that they feel that it's fine, whatever those decisions are. So, yeah, I don't think it should matter. Like you say, as long as it's appropriate what you're wearing. I mean, Pac-Man suit sounds amazing.
I mean, it was a, you know, trousers, jacket and tie. It was appropriate. It just happened to be really freaking cool.
It sounds really cool. That should be the new teacher dress code, maybe. Pac-Man linked tailoring.
Just like themed suits. Like, you can have a suit that's going to be themed. Anything you want.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, that could make me want teachers to conform if it was that.
Like, you can look good and be nerdy. That's my mantra, you know what I mean? Anywho.
I need to find a picture later. You have to put a picture up on Twitter.
It went on blast on Twitter, so you will not have to scroll.
Okay, I'll find it. I'll find it after this chat.
So that's a lot of work then, and you seem to be a very busy bee, for which I both am admiring it, but also I'm not envious of. I say that again, doing a PhD, the irony. Not lost on me. I'm at least self-aware. I don't have to be proactive, okay? What do you do when you're not in work? When you're not working, how do you unwind? What do you get up to?
Do you know what? My favourite thing is just being with animals. If you've got pets.
I was going to probe. I've seen quite a few photos of your dog on Twitter.
Yeah, my best thing. Like, even if I'm working from home and it's been a really tough day, that's it. Lunchtime is going to be outside with the dog, 100%. I think that the power of nature is so underrated for many of us. And actually, kind of what we were saying before about screen time, being able to step out of that space and just be outside, sometimes even leaving your phone at home is so powerful, just detaching, being outside. So yeah, I love that. Walk around the woods with the dog is probably one of my best just like detoxes. I've got, yeah, chickens, other little bits and bobs, or just the beach. So I'm so lucky, I'm quite close to the beach, just head down there. And again, because I think in our work life, we're so connected. Like, you know, even you got an email in this session, like the amount of emails that are just constantly coming in, the notifications on your different platforms can be so exhausting. And that's not even your work, you know, that's just like outside of work, that's just so consuming. I think the most powerful thing can actually be doing nothing. Like, just literally go to another space outside and just do nothing is just so serene, so incredible.
No, I mean, that's a solid answer, I'm not going to lie.
yeah, amazing.
Tell us about
leaving the phone at home. I don't know if you do that much, but leaving the phone at home is like freeing.
I don't, because anxiety tells me that will be the time I hurt myself and will need to call for help. I also enjoy listening to music. So for those two reasons combined, I tend not to. But I think saying I'm not going to look at it, and just enjoy the space and I love
like no emails. Yeah, no emails while you're there.
Data off, that sort of thing. Just enjoy. You know, I think that's really nice. Yeah, like walking the dog is definitely one of the highlights of my day.
You've got a dog?
Yes. Yeah, his name.
What have you got?
His name is Mario, because of course it is. He occasionally features on stream. He's a little Bichon Frise Yorkshire Terrier mix. He's an old boy, but he's a cute boy.
How old is he?
10.
So not too much walking for Mario, just a little stroll around the block.
Yeah, you know, we keep him fit, keep him active, you know. What about yourself? Tell us about your pooch.
Yeah, so she's just turned one. She's a German Shepherd, so probably the opposite of Mario. Like, if you could get the opposite of Mario in a dog, that's probably her. But yeah, she's amazing. She's a lot of energy, but fun. And I think that's the great thing about being around dogs. Your energy shifts from yourself to like your animal, and you just kind of see the world a bit more through their eyes, and it just kind of, yeah, really great just to get back to basics, just like seeing outdoors and fresh air, and love it. Yeah, I probably spend too much money on her though, just I'm a bit of a sucker for dog toys and treats.
I mean, listen, when they're your pride and joy, you know. It's money well spent.
Will Santa Claus be coming for Mario?
Have you seen me? Yes, of course. I do stream through December wearing a Santa hat.
I can't wait. I'll be watching.
Like, I've got to try and earn some money somehow. The PhD stipend doesn't pay that well, you know what I'm saying? I will degrade myself for money. Not the first time I've said that.
It's not degrading. I think Santa outfit is the only thing higher than a Pac-Man suit. That's boss level. Yeah, that's like God level dressing.
Oh, stop, please. So what else are you into then? You're into your films, you're into your music. What else do you do? Try and give us a sense of how you unwind after a busy day, apart from going outside.
So do you know what I go through phases of loving is audiobooks.
Nice.
And if I get a good one, I'll be hooked on it and I'm listening to it all the time. And then I'll start a new one and then, delete the audiobook app to free up space.
Nice.
But a good old book, kind of what you were saying earlier, Chris, a good old paperback, in my opinion, like I do love I've got a log fire in my lounge, light the fire, grab a good book, like something fictiony, something kind of thrillery, you know, kind of a corpse on page one. Ooh. That kind of thing is good. I kind of love those simple pleasures. I think for our well-being, because we live in such a fast-paced, consumerist society, I think being able to just like have a paperback like that I've picked up in a charity shop for £1, like, just feels, to use your word from earlier, like so wholesome, like just like an artifact, just this thing in this like quiet space. I just love it. I would choose that over like some big
We need, plumbing is a necessity, yeah.
And like good food. Yeah, sometimes I think of it. I mean, I don't think I'll do it. Could you commit to that? That kind of off-grid?
I would need electricity and Wi-Fi, but like the idea of not having to deal with people.
Is it your nightmare? Is a log cabin your nightmare?
It's not a night. I've been glamping many a time. I do quite enjoy it.
Oh, glamping. Okay, you had a plug socket.
yeah. You know, but like just like, you know, disconnect from like the notifications, the pings, you know, because lights are quite useful. Especially when you're blind, you know what I mean? But like, I do agree, like, if I could not deal with people, that's a very attractive proposition. I'd take that. Yeah, I'd happily live on like a mountain somewhere. That'd be great.
I mean, not all people. Some people are great, but yeah. It is, you know, exhausting, isn't it?
I'll drop in a little musical reference by Patrick Stump, but it's a person is all right, but people have never done a good thing.
That's so true. I love that.
There's a few persons I really enjoy. People, though, not so much.
It's good. I like that quote.
Okay, so that's neat. That's good. Have you read anything good lately?
I'm currently reading a really good book called Hostage. That is okay. Let's see what you think. So in it, the woman is, and I haven't read the end, so I can't spoil it for anyone who's reading it, which is very unlikely. So it's called Hostage, and the woman, the main protagonist, is the air stewardess. I don't know if that's what they're called now, but the air...
Cabin crew? I don't know.
Waiter? Cabin crew. So she's in the cabin crew, and she suddenly gets a note. She's tidying up like the plane, like she's been serving drinks, and then she finds a note, and it's got a photo of her daughter, her six-year-old daughter, like a Polaroid, and it says, you've got to help me hijack the plane or I'll kill your daughter. So she's kind of thinking, do I go against all my cabin crew training and let the hijacker into the pilot's cabin where he's going to obviously hijack the plane, or risk, for the sake of these 300 people on board, protect my daughter? So she's got to decide between the plane of 300 strangers or her one daughter. And yeah, really, so that's just the point I'm at.
A really juiced up version of the trolley problem, right?
Yeah, I love that trolley problem. A really juiced up, like mile high version of the trolley problem.
So this is not a plug. It's not an advertisement. No hashtag, no ad. But you can actually get a board game called Trial by Trolley, created by the people that make Cyanide and Happiness, that is the trolley problem. One person is the conductor, two teams play cards that are like, you know, putting on the tracks, trying to make you avoid choosing their track. So it might be like, wow, your childhood puppy, you know, someone developing the cure for cancer. The other team put a card down that's like, you know, your worst enemy. And then you have to pick which track you're going to. It's wow. Great at parties. You really learn a lot about people when you play a game like that.
Yeah, I'm thinking I've actually made a note just generally for getting a new game in my life, not that game, no ad. Yeah, that sounds amazing. And also, like, one we talked to our students about, the Heinz Dilemma. Do you know that one, Chris?
I've heard of it, but do please explain for listeners' benefit.
Yeah, so the Heinz Dilemma is a really interesting one we talked to students about, where... there's basically a man who can't afford a cure for his wife. I hope I'm getting this right. He can't afford a cure for her disease. So does he let her die? Does he try and get the money to buy the cure? Does he break in and steal the cure? Something like that. And thinking, what is the best case scenario? And it's interesting, so many students say like break in and steal the cure. So thinking, when is it okay to break those societal boundaries, like be a thief, but it was for the greater good of saving his wife's life. So yeah, just having those kind of hypothetical conversations, really interesting, isn't it? It makes you question what you would do. I guess you'll never know what you would do.
To draw it's very, another, very interesting. Another pop culture parallel, Breaking Bad, for example.
I never watched it.
You know, just for pop culture reference purely.
You know, I started watching it, but I felt too sad at, like his diagnosis, so I didn't get past episode one.
Fair. Well, that's essentially the same thing. Like, obviously, it's based in the US. There's no healthcare. He can't afford the treatment. What does he do to resolve it? And obviously, it's not really a spoiler to say he's creating drugs because he's a brilliant chemistry teacher.
Mm-hmm. I do know I might have to watch it. I've somehow avoided it for about 10 years. So maybe that's what I'll get into.
I watched it. Wasn't like a huge fan. I'd go so far as say I'm waiting for I can hear the comment section already. It's a little bit overrated. Well, it was very good. I've had discussions since I watched it that have changed my perspective. Like, if you look at it through the lens of toxic masculinity, actually quite an interesting viewpoint to take.
Oh, interesting.
But just watching it, like having it on, I wasn't. It was more like a process thing. I was like, I'm doing it for the sake of doing it. Anywho.
Interesting. Controversial.
I know. You know. Now, these are my two favourite questions in the whole show. The first one is, if you had no limitations whatsoever, you have unlimited access to resources, finance, expertise, time, whatever it is, what is your one blue sky idea that you would like to do? It can be like a research project, it can be like a business opportunity. Ooh. What would it be and why?
Okay, I think I already know what I'd want to do.
Strong.
Did you ever watch the documentary about the Fyre Festival?
Yes, I did. That was a fun Sunday.
So it's one of the best things I think I've ever watched. I tried watching it again, but because I knew all the spoilers, it wasn't the same. But I guess for anyone who's not seen it, it's where these people were hyping up that this amazing festival was going to happen called the Fyre Festival. Everyone was buying tickets for thousands and thousands of pounds. And they couldn't make it happen. And so everyone flew to this tropical island expecting the festival. And there was just like, there was no plumbing there, actually. There were no toilets. Instead of the luxury experience they'd paid, you know, 50,000 each to access, there was nothing. But what really interested me, because he got, you know, social media influencers to pretend it, you know, that it was all going well. He got, who is it? Some of the Jenners. Or Kardashians, or I can't remember, but he got famous, you know, models to be posing on boats saying, can't wait to see you at the festival, you know, put out pictures on social media platforms that made everyone think this festival was in process and they were going to stay in luxury villas. So I would actually love to make the Fyre Festival happen, because clearly there was like demand for it, except when people got off my private planes, there would be a festival.
Okay, that's fair. That's
and I would love to actually make it happen, because I think it would have been great, but it also showed the power of social media, because everyone just fell into this dream.
I was just going to say, I would really love to do like a content analysis of that to look at the impact of parasocial relationships, because there's marketing, like marketing psychology is a thing, advertising psychology is a thing, but was it not the pull of those celebrity names and this supposed relationship that we have to them that maybe was a big draw for people?
Interesting. That was definitely a big part of it.
Interesting. So yeah. You'd make it happen. Who would your headliner be? Who would be on your guest list? What would the entry requirements be? Would it be free? Would you just be family and friends? Would I get an invite?
Oh yeah. I guess if it's infinite resources, yeah. I think just everyone I know is getting an invite. You know, anyone who's a good person is welcome.
Oh, that's me. And I just think
it'd be amazing. Nice. You're obviously VIP. You're getting the special wristband, Chris.
Yes.
Yeah, I love the thought of like being able to do an event like that. It's just a shame he didn't actually plan any logistics of actually making an event. But yeah, fascinating to watch. Just, yeah, I would love to see that. Or something similar, like just buy a tropical island and just invite everyone you know. Just for
who would be your headline for Poppy Fest?
Oh man,
that sounds a bit opioid. Actually, I take that back.
It's definitely above board. Do you know what? Probably I have to say just like some kind of big cool name, like Chemical Brothers or something like that. Nice. Like just someone with loads of great like dance tracks that everyone knows. I don't know. I probably after we've spoken today, I'm going to think of a million headliners. But it's always the way. I can literally think of no music I've ever listened to ever right now.
I mean,
it's like you and Bulbasaur. I've gone dry.
Just panic sets in and you don't know what to do.
Panic, man.
Okay, that's excellent. I love that idea. That's again, quite wholesome. Quite wholesome.
Oh, cool. Thanks. I'll see you there, hopefully, one day.
Well, if it happens, send me an invite. I'll let's know I could do with a break from everything.
Okay. It might not be soon, but... might be a few years.
You heard it here first. Brass tacks on this episode. This is on the internet now. It lives forever. You've made this promise. Can't renege on that now.
We'll get a selfie together on the island. Don't worry.
Nice. There we go. I'll know I've peaked when I'm getting selfies with you. There we go. Smashed it. That's made the bucket list now. There we go.
I love that.
So this is my second favorite question. It's always fun. But it's that. Someone or something that you would love to give like a shout out to, someone who's inspired you or been really influential on your journey, just to sort of like pay a little bit of homage back to them. Anyone Ooh. You want, we've had answers from parental figures, pedagogical figures, researchers, anything you want.
That's a really good question. Do you know there is someone actually on my Twitter I've made friends with recently called Mike Grother, and actually Mike is doing some amazing stuff with kind of ex-prisoners in schools, with children, with adults, with the elderly. Mike just does amazing stuff. He's doing like musicals, back to our stuff about performance, incredible stuff. I'm hoping to work with Mike on a future project, but yeah, I just think Mike, if he will be listening, so I'll make sure he watches, but he doesn't realise how many people's lives he touch. And I think there's so many people we know, aren't there, who like do these amazing things and don't see the power of what they're doing. So I think people like Mike, who are just, you know, so selfless, trying to help others.
I'm going
to
insert the Spider-Man meme here, where like he's pointing at you as you're saying this. Like, I feel like that's the vibe here. Like, I feel like you creating a generation of educators and like dedicating yourself to teaching is like equally as selfless, and you're like, Mike just does great stuff and I pale in comparison. Like,
I'm just a teacher, man, but yeah, there's definitely loads more. I could name a million people. I'm just teaching. I think literally every student I've ever taught is amazing as well. We've got so many incredible young people in our classrooms that are going to go on to just inspire the next generation, and that's what's so exciting about the job. But I mean, everyone in my life I'm grateful for. I can't name them all in this podcast, but everyone.
This really is heading towards one of the most wholesome episodes. It's just so, it's like sickly sweet. I love it. This is like so nice. It's such an awesome podcast. So I think like it's interesting for me because I joke that I want to immediately abandon higher education as soon as I'm finished with my qualification, because I actually enjoy the process of teaching. There is nothing greater than that moment where like you explain a concept and you see the penny drop, you know, you see someone get it and go, I didn't get that, now I do. That's amazing. Marking and bureaucracy, however, is awful and I hate it.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Marking, so I love my job 100%, and I love every single day, every single second until marking comes in, which again, although I love reading what students put, I will moan. Like a lot of my friends know, don't contact me when the marking comes in. Give me some space on WhatsApp because I'm just going to be moaning because you're just sat on the screen. I'm guessing you mark online as well. Yeah. Just scrolling through script after script, checking the plagiarism is exhausting, but it's a means to an end. I guess, how could we prove they've understood without the assessment? But definitely the low point of higher education. Apart from, you know, when you read those really amazing gems that the students have written, and you just think, yeah, and then it revitalizes you, like, okay, I can mark 10 more scripts today.
There's not
so it's
better.
Worth it. But no, I agree, Chris. Like, if I had to give up one part of HE, it would be that someone could do my marking. That would be...
Two words. Guest lectureship. That's, you know what I'm saying? That's what I'm aiming for.
Like, yeah, that's cool.
Come in, do the cool teachery bit, get all the applause, get out. Thank you very much.
And leave. Maybe that's the dream.
I've got to dream of something, or else it's going to be a dreary time. You know what I'm saying? I feel like you're talking about...
So what is your... Sorry, Chris. What is your PhD title then?
The title is... I can't regurgitate it because it's all academic-y words that I'm trying to make much snappier. But the basis of it is looking at... can a specific type of game, a digital game with a purpose, as I call it, that deliberately tackles social issues, be used in conjunction to reduce mental health stigmatization? And what is the impact of playing these? Basically, we don't know. There's a whole bunch of people, including myself and other colleagues from like York and Abertay up in Scotland, that are looking at this type of thing because there's a big need, a big gap in the research for the impact of these type of games. So it is just like, well, if we build this theoretical model, what happens when we play them? Does it change knowledge? Does it change empathy? Does it change perspectives? And then looking at like, what happens if, you know, pardon the terminology, but the game sort of screws with you a little bit? Like, if you change the game mechanics and what the game allows you to do, does that change your perceptions of what you're doing?
So it's very interesting.
It's pretty neat. I enjoy it. Nerdy AF, as you couldn't already tell. But like, yeah,
it sounds really interesting. I've not read anything quite like it, so yeah, you're definitely going to be bringing that new knowledge.
The big sort of, you know, application to it is sort of thinking about like, imagine if you could get to like an induction week, and you know how like you'll be in induction week and then they'll have the well-being session, and it's usually a really nice lady, it's always just before lunch, and she's like, you know, come to well-being services if you need anything, we're here to support you, but in brackets it's like we're horrifically understaffed, overworked and underpaid, there's like a 6-week waiting time if you need to see someone, it's slightly better than the rest of the country unless you can afford to go private, you know, kind of like, imagine like being able to play like a short game related experience that told you about all the local resources, all the online resources, help break down some sort of stigmatization around talking about mental health. Uni's a big change, as well as saying like, and this is what's available on campus should you need it. That's a really engaging way of getting that information across.
That's
and should that be a thing? We don't know. There might be no effect. We'll find out. Anecdotally, lots of evidence to say like, you know, video games are important to people and have had really important impacts on their life. Checkpoint by Joe Donnelly is a really nice... I'd be insulting it by calling it a coffee table read, but it's so well written, it's so easy to read, which is a testament to Joe's excellent journalistic style. But that's, you know, really, really good.
Amazing. So yeah, that's kind it of sounds it, brilliant.
In a nutshell, I guess.
So have you got 3 years to go?
Oh, no, I'm starting my third year in January.
Oh, wow, brilliant.
So it's the business end of the year. But yes,
good luck. It's going to be brilliant, Chris. I can just feel it.
Well, I mean, I'm going to give it everything that's in the tank, a little bit extra, chuck the sink at it, and then the engine if required. So we'll go for it. One of my last questions for you then is a bit of fun. We like to have a laugh on this podcast. You are going away for a retreat to a biodome of your choice. Doesn't have to be tropical. I wouldn't personally go anywhere that's too hot. Have you seen me? I'd fry. You go in there for an indefinite amount of time because you need a break. You need a retreat. You can take with you one film or TV box set, one book or collection of books, a game, and an album. What do you take?
Am I allowed one of each?
You're allowed one of each. If it's sold like together in a package, you can have it. Like a box set, like, I don't know, all the Game of Thrones, you can physically buy it in one thing. You can buy the entire works of Shakespeare in one thing.
You know? Oh, okay. See, I'm not that quick thinking right now to think of any like trilogies or anything. But For a film, do you know, it'd probably have to be something like from the Studio Ghibli range, like something like
Let's
Spirited
go.
Away.
One answer that is. Nice.
Something just like totally chilled and magical. Spirited Away is my film. For my book, I mean, am I going like today to the Biodome?
You have time to prepare. You can go buy something.
Because I'm kind of halfway through that really good book about the hijacking. So I'm
Let's
probably just going to
say
take
you get to finish that on the way to the airport.
that. Okay. So I get another one. Do you know my favorite book of all time? It's a classic. It's so old. It's the one you always get for free copyright on like every ebook reader you ever get. The
Check it
Count
out.
of Monte Cristo.
Ooh, okay.
The Count of Monte Cristo. I just love a revenge story, and that is the best revenge story. So something like that would just, sitting in a biodome reading Count of Monte Cristo is probably the one. As for a game, so you mean like a tech game?
So, video game, board game, something to entertain yourself, you know?
Okay, my secret favorite console ever
Oh no,
is
everyone
the
lean in.
Nintendo DS.
Oh,
What?
okay. I've got everyone to lean in. DS, okay, tell me
Oh
more.
yeah. I love the DS so much, and I'd probably have to go either one of the Pokemon DS games, or probably the best game I ever played on DS was Hotel Dusk. I don't know if you're a DS fan. Have you ever
I
played
mean,
Hotel Dusk?
can you not see my collection of Nintendo handhelds behind me?
Well, I don't know
From
if you're like, a Switch guy.
a re I mean, I play all the games. Have you seen? Like, you look up nerd in the dictionary, it's me. You look up psychologist in the dictionary, also me in a suit.
Well, have you played Hotel Dusk?
So I haven't because it's actually a very, very rare game. It was
I found the one game you've not played.
very sparse across Europe, and its sequel, I think, is even rarer to find. I
I've
think.
played the sequel too, but not as good as the first one.
Oh, okay. Oh, go on.
But yeah, so it would probably be that on the DS. But if I maybe got that game card in the Hotel Dusk box, then maybe Pokemon is in the DS.
Oh, sheesh. You're playing the system now, Poppy. Love to see it. You like, yeah. Playing with portals over here. What Pokemon game you taking though? That's a big question.
trying to think best ones. Maybe Pearl.
Oh, okay. Solid choice.
But
There's
yeah, just something like that you can just play for hours.
on the DS you got Diamond Pearl, Black and White 2, but you've also
Yeah.
got Heart Gold and Soul Silver, the classic
I've
remix.
not played those two.
Oof,
Maybe
that's
I'll
tough.
take one of them then. Is they're new? Okay, I'll go for one. I'll go for a new one. But something like that, you know how you just play that for hours, just love that gameplay. So something like that. And then what was the last one? An album.
Can be a greatest hits.
So I haven't got Spotify.
Nope. I mean, if you're really struggling, I'll let you have a playlist from your Spotify. Say we've burned it to CD, like you did in the old days, for your car
You know, when you
drive.
said album, I actually thought you meant photo album because I just haven't heard that word for so long.
I mean, my
Photo
vinyl
album
player has just fainted.
in my memory. Favorite album? Trying to think what albums. That's a really good question. Do you know, I used to love this band. I don't know if you've heard of, called Sparkle Horse, like from
That is an
decades ago.
amazing name for a band.
Yeah, it's a really cool name, and it's just a very magical, cute sound. So something like that. So then I've got my Japanese film, I've got my little crazy games, and I've got a little bit of magical music. I mean, maybe this is what I need instead of the cabin. I was going wrong with that cabin. I just need the biodome.
I mean,
So
I'm sure a cabin is slightly more feasible. I'm reticent to say to your poppy, I'm afraid, but
you've offered me biodome now. Don't take it away from me. You offered
It's a fun thought experiment. That's what it's meant to be.
it. You psychologists with your thought experiments.
It's almost like I like learning about people when they tell me what they imagine they do with things. Who'd have thought, right?
Have you analysed everything I've said to you today?
Oh, no, yes, and I also read minds because I'm a psychologist.
Are you going to write me a psych report after
If I
the
had the time, still no, because that'd be deeply unethical. This is an entertainment program.
podcast?
Okay. And by
Well,
entertainment, I
thanks for
mean.
letting me lie on your virtual couch on the podcast.
Now we're stepping into very muddy waters here. Not when I say on the podcast is to be taken as advice or advertisement. I am not qualified to give professional mental health advice. I am a mental health advocate, happy to talk mints about my experiences and the thoughts, feelings and progressions I've had in life. However, nothing I should be taken as advice or encouragement for other services. And it's a big thing. I was just listening to a podcast with a few, I'm going to say friends, I'm probably overselling it a little bit, of their colleagues at Take This on Champions of Psychology just last night, talking about the ethics of media psychology and why it's so important to do things ethically when you are in the mental health space as a professional, but also as an advocate, which is one of the roles I'm happy to have on, say, Twitch as a Safe in Our World ambassador and Take This ambassador.
Brilliant.
About doing things properly and ethically when you're talking about mental health, you know what I mean?
100%.
Sorry, had to just like get that disclaimer in there for legal purposes. Trying to throw
always
me under
good
the bus.
To have a disclaimer.
Like, you know, I sell the show as entertainment and me being entertaining is like, that's tenuous as it is, you know what I'm saying? with thin ice as we go. I always like to how the turns have tabled right at the end of the show and say, is there anything you'd like to ask me? You've already asked a little bit about my work. I've chatted a lot of mints this episode anyway. But any questions that you've thought of since we've been chatting that you just love to, let's put you in the host seat. It's warm because I've been sat in it. Apologies.
Mm, okay. My question is, what are we going to research together?
Let's all look at some mental health, pedagogy kind of creative stuff. The benefits of mental health through teaching creative subjects, or the subject teaching compared to STEM. See if there's a difference. Let's find out.
Love it. So when you need that little side project from your PhD in the coming months, I'll be here, Chris. We'll get it going.
I'm pretty sure that's how we met. You I think you like replied to like my pitch deck that was like, we should do some research on a thing. And I was like, why would I say no? That sounds great. That's what I do for.
Now we're one step closer now. Now we've shared our thoughts on Pokemon. We've shared our favorite Pokemon. Yeah, I think we're good to go. We've laid the foundation.
I think it's going to be, look out, world is not ready. You know what I'm saying? Between your knowledge and my ability to exist, I'm sure we'll get something done. Like, I'll be there. I'll be able to say, yes, I was there, and you know. And that counts as a citation, right? But I can't say I'm going to add very much.
Stop. It's going to be wonderful. I would love to definitely do something with you. It'd be brilliant.
For sure. Then, lastly, where is the best place for people to find you? Obviously, on the video, your Twitter is there. All the links for the stuff you mentioned will be available wherever you found this video and/or audio, depending on your preferences. But where can people find you? Where is the best place to get in touch?
Yeah, I'm normally nesting on Twitter, to be honest. So feel free, if you're someone who likes LinkedIn or that kind of thing, feel free to connect. But yeah, just come join me on Twitter. Happy to receive appropriate DMs and get in touch with people. So yeah, happy to connect with anyone.
And you get great German Shepherd dog pics. Totally worth it.
Yeah. And other animals as well. You have to come and join the feed to find out.
It's all going. Right. So, well, unless there's anything else you'd like to add in.
I just want to say thanks. Yeah, thanks so much for the conversation, Chris. And really great to talk to you and reflect on kind of mental health through so many spheres of our lives. So, yeah, just really thanks for the opportunity to chat to you today.
I should love to get really mad about it. It's like, you know, a disabled person studying mental health, like I have something to shout about, you know what I mean? It's not oppression, honestly, it's totally not. That's not what fuels me at all. Dr. Poppy Gibson, it has been a pleasure. I have been psyched to be with you on this episode. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been great. It's been an absolute hoot, I would go so far as to say. All it remains for me to do now is just to flick over to the ending screen for our video listeners and to say goodbye. Until next time, look after your mind, body, and soul, and I'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Psyched to Be With You. I hope you enjoyed it just as much as I did. If you did, do please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps. Otherwise, check out the description of the episode for the links for the guest, but also to keep up with information about the show and myself. I really hope you enjoyed this listen. Until next time, take it easy, look after your mind, body and soul, and I'll see you again for another episode very, very soon. Bye bye.